from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington, you're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Ladies and gentlemen, today on the pod, we have a very, very special guest, our one and only Dean, Dr. Ken Anderson. Welcome, Kenny. How are you doing?
Doing well, Rue. How are you today?
Awesome. Doing great. Another day in paradise, as they say. So, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
If you could, take me back to the early days. San Pedro, California. Sunshine, beautiful blue ocean beaches. What's happening in your life?
Yeah. Born and raised in San Pedro. One of the more different things about me is I was very tall, very young. So when I was 12, I was about 6'4". And then I quit growing about 14 years old at about 6'6". But the reason I bring that up is I went out of town to high school, and it was purely a basketball decision. So I did not go to San Pedro High. I went to Gardena Serra. We call it Gardena Serra now because to distinguish it from Serra San Mateo of Tom Brady fame, and then there's also a J Serra in Orange County now. So went out of town to high school. And when I say out of town, you know, 15, 20 miles away from Pedro, and had a great experience at Serra. Loved it, but also always loved being back in Pedro, down in the harbor, on those beaches, etc.
So when did you start playing ball? Were you kind of interested in it pretty young?
I did get interested in it pretty young. My earliest recollection is probably around 5 or 6, playing at the Boys Club in Pedro. Yeah. And it was just, you know, it worked out that I was blessed to be a pretty good athlete. My dad was a tremendous athlete, and I think I got a lot of his skills and abilities. And it was just something I gravitated to. And then my size helped out a lot.
That's one thing I was never blessed with, being a great athlete. I could hold my own, but it was pretty early on. I wasn't destined for anything big. I'm surprised I don't know this. What did your parents do?
My mom, a little bit unusual for that day and age. My mom was a working professional. She managed managed stores in a large women's retail chain that it no longer exists, but think of the type of women's store you would have found in a mall anytime over the past 10 or 20 years. She was very good at opening stores in new malls, new locations. So she worked all over the LA area. My dad, for lack of a better term, worked for a sign company, you know, companies that make those big neon signs.
Yeah.
And he was a bill collector, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done my stint in that arena. So
okay.
tough gig for sure. Interesting. What some business in the blood from the start. So and yeah, did you have two siblings? Any siblings?
Zero.
Zero. Just you. Perfect. Zero. All right. And so you're going out of town, you say, to play some high school basketball. Now, was that like a good program up there? You getting a call from the coach? How does that work?
Well, you know, we're talking about many, many, many years ago. So 1973-ish, I guess. And for lack of a better term, I was heavily recruited out of junior high school.
Awesome.
And Serra was the place that, you know, we thought was the best fit all the way around, school, hoops, location, et cetera. I think while I was at Sarah, I think my junior year, for example, at Sarah, we had five or six guys on the varsity that went to Division One.
Nice.
You know, we were in a very, very competitive league, Southern California Hoops in 74, 75, 76 was very, very, very good. A bunch of names that nobody who listens to this would remember or know because we're all so old. But it was effectively at that age, even a basketball decision.
Okay, playing some high school ball, and then next steps college. So what happens then?
Well, what happens then is I don't grow anymore, and I really don't get any better. So I have a good high school career, nothing spectacular, and I end up in junior college, and a fantastic experience in JUCO that I wouldn't trade for anything. I actually spent 3 years in junior college because in my second year, I broke my foot and had to redshirt. But it was a tremendous time. I played for an incredible man by the name of Jim White at LA Harbor Junior College, and it was just a great experience.
And then at some point you get a call from Fitz up in Spokane, huh?
At some point, yeah, I get a call from Fitz in Spokane. The irony there is that the first recruiting letter I ever got back when I was a sophomore at Sarah was from Fitz when he was an assistant at Gonzaga. And then, you know, fast forward, depending on how you want to count, 5 or 6 years later, and he's the head coach, and they're recruiting me hard out of JUCO, along with a bunch of other schools. But, you know, like a lot of us, I fell in love with Gonzaga on my recruiting trip. We were moving at that time from the Big Sky Conference to what is now known as the WCC. And so it was a great opportunity to continue to play in college, play at a great place. And again, a decision that I'll never, ever, ever regret.
I hear you. I hear you there. You small forward? Is that where you, was that your position?
Small. I mean, kind of 2, 3, or 4, depending on what was happening. Most of the time, probably small forward, but I did time at both 2 and 4 as well.
Okay. Very cool. Any favorite Fitz moments for those who might not know who that is? Dan Fitzgerald was a longtime coach and at one point athletic director at Gonzaga.
Yeah, you know, there's so many things about Fitz that are memorable and stand out. I guess, you know, if I had one or two, that I probably shouldn't share them on this podcast.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But I would say this, that in particular, my senior year, we had a great bunch of guys. Stockton was a freshman. One of our current trustees, Ed Taylor, was a classmate of mine and a teammate on that team. And what I loved about Fitz was he gave us room to be great, and his passion and his fire was something that was contagious, and all those things together led us to have a really good in my case senior year.
That's awesome. He definitely probably doesn't get enough credit for starting things in motion to, you know, eventually lead to Monson and Fuey and what we have today. So and I know I've told you this probably 20 times in the hallway, but my uncle loves to tell a story about you, and that, of course, I'll botch this, but situation where coming down to the wire in the game, tie game, you get fouled, you're going up to the line and Fitz is maybe over coaching you and he just kind of turned and kind of said, hey, I kind of gave him that, I got this look, knocked them both down for the victory. So that's what I remember it being. So I'm going to say that's official.
That's close. I mean, and coincidentally, you know, we're recording this the week of our home game against Santa Clara. And that was a game against Santa Clara my senior year. One of the wild things about that game, if I recall correctly, we shot, both teams shot around 38 to 42 free throws. It was an absolute battle. And we were fortunate enough, I was fortunate enough, I got fouled with 5 seconds left, down one, and made both throws to win the game. And so, or to put us ahead. And that was a really cool moment.
Awesome. Awesome. And Gabe, I think, you know, when I was a student a few years after you, in the old kennel, the original kennel games, and I mean, it was something special. Not that I would go back given the current situation, but yeah, fantastic. So playing ball here, Johnny's a freshman when you're a junior, right?
Senior.
Okay. So yeah. I would guess back then he's, you know, not getting he's good, but no one knows how good he is yet, right?
I think that's a very fair assessment. I think that, you know, he was a freshman, you know, back in the day for the longest time at GU in the men's program, freshmen didn't play. He played a little bit later in the year. Our starting off guard got hurt, and that led Johnny to get a few more minutes down the stretch. But I don't think anyone, you know, saw the success that was coming his way. What you saw with him, even at that time, though, was tremendous intelligence on the court, an incredible desire to win, incredibly tough mentally and physically, and just a fantastic teammate. You know, so those intangible sorts of things were always there. And then as he grew a little bit, got stronger, through his work with Steve DeLong in particular, he was able to take that whole package and become one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, I think it's neat watching you with former players. It just seems like even guys that were 20 years after you, right? There's some kind of connection there that you can sense when you guys get together and a bond that is, you know, Zag basketball.
Yeah, I think that's true. And we're actually, Jeff Brown is kind of leading an attempt to get us all together on a more regular basis. So a few of us got together, for example, and watched the Kentucky game.
Oh, awesome.
And that was really cool. So,
and it worked for us. So do that again.
And it worked for us. Yeah. Yeah, it did.
Huge win. Huge win. That's awesome. So, and then so I guess when you get here, you have 2 years of eligibility. So you play junior, senior year, and then you stick around for your MBA?
Stuck around for my MBA, yeah.
Okay, but you weren't playing that year.
Not playing that year. I was a GA in the business school. I was working in the controller's office for Linda Grigsby, Rick Jones, and Chuck Murphy. And I was also, there was a store down across the street from Jack and Dan's. Early on, it was called Chad's, and it was called University Food Center. And I was, you know, working the cash register at nights.
So where is that, where that diner's at right now? I guess they call it Frugal's now, or where was that at?
It's where the Starbucks used to be. I forget what's in there now. It's immediately connected to Ultimate Bagel.
That's right. That looks like it could have been a store. Wow.
It was a store. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. So you're a GA, and we're now back then, we're in the basement of what I call ad or admin building. I call it College Hall now, but I refuse to do that.
I appreciate that.
for the first 125 years of this school's existence, it was the admin building. And you told me a story once about, I mean, obviously a different setting there. We're in the basement of the building there, of as a GA, you got to play bartender to a Nobel laureate.
True. Bud Barnes, our former dean and really the father of Gonzaga business, had started what is now known as our economic symposium. And that particular year, as our honored speaker, Bud was able to bring in Milton Friedman to give the talk. And so one of the things I did on the side was bartend events. And so, yeah, I bartended an event for Bud and Milton Friedman.
I thought it was related to the GA role of knowing Bud, probably have you do everything, including a run to Costco or something like that. But, oh, fantastic. Okay, so then MBA, you did 2 years or just 1 year in the MBA?
1 year.
1 year, okay. And then it's onward and upward to Lincoln, Nebraska, if I'm correct.
Yeah, so it's kind of a interesting journey. You know, the reason I got my MBA is I really didn't know what else I wanted to do. And while I was getting my MBA, we had one of our management professors resign, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks into the, I want to say spring semester. Could have been fall, but I think it was spring. And so Bud needed people to cover that guy's classes. And I was one of the two people that he asked to teach. And so less than a year after I was done playing, I was teaching principles of management. And I'm sure I was horrible. I'm positive I was just horrible. But, you know, the juxtaposition of, you know, where I was 10 months before and then standing up in front of a classroom of, you know, a lot of people that, you know, you would call my peers were bizarre. But that kind of stuck in the back of my head. And at the same time, Bud was beginning of going for AACSB accreditation for the business school. And so part of my GA duties were related to that. But one of the things at the time that was really important if you wanted accreditation is you wanted a lot of your faculty to have terminal degrees. And in most cases, with the exception of you, Rue, that's going to be a PhD, right? Could be a JD, could be an LLM, could be whatever, but in most cases, it's a PhD. And so the guy who was my academic advisor talked it over with Bud and decided that he was going to go to the University of Nebraska to get his PhD. And Nebraska cut some deal with him about how long he had to be there and that sort of thing. And so, you know, some of your audience can remember 22, and some of your audience is probably looking forward to 22. But when you're 22 years old and you're not tied down in any serious way, it's kind of like, okay, sounds like a good idea. Oh, you know, I had a little bit of teaching experience. My advisor was talking in my ear about it. Sounded like a good idea. So I ultimately packed up my pickup and drove to Lincoln. Had no idea what I was getting into. You know, we talked a few minutes ago. Obviously, I'm a big sports guy. I was so clueless at the time. I forgot it was Nebraska of Nebraska football. So I the link time in my truck on a football Saturday, and all these people are walking around in red. I go, yeah, that's right. This is Nebraska football.
Oh, man. You're up. And a far cry from San Pedro, no less.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I drove through Nebraska once on my way to grad school in Florida. And what I remember was the road was straight. So if you could somehow get your steering wheel to stay and put in a cruise control, you basically had autopilot. And flat, corn, and then I think every couple miles, another go red or go big red sign in the fence post. And
I think you've captured Interstate 80 very well, at least until you get Lincoln, like every place else. It's kind of grown up a bit and grown out a bit. And, you know, Lincoln and Omaha are both on I-80, but they've kind of come together a little bit more than back in the day. But your description of it being flat and straight and go big red signs everywhere, yeah, that's pretty accurate.
For sure, for sure. So 4 years, 5 years in Lincoln?
4 years. Yeah, you know.
Okay, and then now, so it's kind of a range that you got your eye coming back to Spokane. Even when you went down there, was it kind of set up to where good possibility?
No, that really wasn't part of a plan. It, you know, like I said, I didn't know a whole lot about what I was doing. I mean, so in that sense, you know, falling into the career that I currently have, it was all just kind of, you know, yeah, sounds good, right place, right time. I didn't know a whole lot about research. I didn't know a whole lot about job market. And, but, you know, shameless plug here, my Gonzaga education prepared me very, very well for a doctoral program. I could write better. I could speak better. I could think better than most of my colleagues. So I had a relatively quick adjustment process, and was actually, when I went on the job market, was interviewing with an awful lot of bigger schools, you know, Texas A&M, Penn State, places like that. But Gonzaga happened to have an opening, and I said, you know, this is awesome. I need to check this out.
You know, that's a recurring theme of that I hear from alum in the business school and outside the business school. Gonzaga prepared me well for whatever the next phase is. So that's great to hear. So you obviously choose Gonzaga. You load the pickup truck back up, go back across, I think you said I-80, take a kind of a right, maybe a left, and now you're back
take a right somewhere around Wyoming and get on 25 and then take a left on I-90. And the next thing you know, you're in Spokane.
There you have it. There you have it. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, the first couple years, like anybody in any situation, was an adjustment. I had recently married. My son had just been born. You know, we buy a house, we do all the stuff that you do when you start a new career in a new city. Fortunate at the time for us personally that the economy was a little bit down in Spokane. So, you know, we were able to get into a house pretty easily. But, you know, I did have one big thing hanging over my head, and that was my dissertation. Not uncommon for in business schools to hire new faculty, what they call ABD, all but dissertation. And so it took me longer than it should have to finish. It took me about a year and a half. So even though I came back to Gonzaga in the fall of 86, My degree from Nebraska is dated August of 88. It took me a little while to finish, but still, you know, came back, loved being in the classroom, loved the community, loved the students. Again, a decision that I'll never regret.
Yeah. Well, and you were good at it. I don't know if you remember, I was in, it must have been your management 350 class, maybe my senior year. You were superb. It was fun.
Oh, thank you.
And at one point, Kenny, you get into some high school coaching.
Yeah, I did.
St. George's, I believe. Was it St. George's women?
No, it was the St. George's boys. A good friend of mine, Jennifer Mountain, who's one of the all-time great women's players at Gonzaga, got the boys' job at St. George's. And that made her relatively unique, not only in the state of Washington, but nationwide at the time. I want to say this is probably around 94, 95 or somewhere in there, that she was a woman coaching males. And so we were together out there for, I want to say, 7 years. Had a great time, wonderful community at St. George's. We did very, very well. Some of the people who listen to this will know Chris Johnson from down in our athletic department. He was one of our players while we were there. So that was a great experience. And then from there, I was head coach at Gonzaga Prep for a couple years. And then along the way, and I think it was before all this, yeah, it was, I also was an assistant on the men's team at Gonzaga. So I think it was Chuck Brown, Jeff Goss, Eric Brady, Jamie Dudley, Mark Armstead, that group of guys, I want to say 93, 94, somewhere in there.
And so then you're working under Fitz at that point.
Yeah, that 1 year, it was a cast of thousands on the coaching staff. Fitz, Munson, Few, Greer, Jerry Krause, myself, and that was the first time we ever played in the WCC title game. We were down at Portland and we lost a tough game to Pepperdine in the finals that year. Did not get kind of repeated the drama of my senior year at Gonzaga. We did not get an NIT bid the year that I coached, just like my senior year. Although one artifact of my career at Gonzaga that I didn't mention earlier, we actually printed tickets for an NIT game my senior year. We thought we were going to get to go to the NIT, and we had tickets printed for a game at the old Coliseum, and that never came to pass.
Oh man, those are collector's items. You got them stuffed in a box somewhere or anything?
Oh yeah, they're in a safe deposit box somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah. They're probably in the Jepson closet. I think I've seen some signed jerseys. I don't even know who the players are floating around in that closet. So wow. So that's pretty fascinating. So but the next year, so you said 93, 94, and I don't, maybe some of the listeners don't realize that the tournament wasn't in Vegas every year. There was a host school back then, right? So it was at the University of Portland.
So for a number of years, they had a relatively permanent host. So if you're a longtime Zag fan, you'll remember that for a lot of years it was at Santa Clara or San Diego.
Right.
Actually, the first year of the tournament, a lot of people probably wouldn't know this. The first round games were at the higher seed.
Oh.
And so the first year of the conference tournament, which I want to say was somewhere around 87, Doug Spradley's senior year, we were the two and Pepperdine was the seven. We hosted and Pepperdine actually beat us in that game. So then they kind of went to, you know, a little bit more of a rotation, and that's why it was in Portland. We ended up a few years later having the tournament for 1 year. And then Mike Roth had the brilliant stroke of luck to be watching ESPN late one night and see some new arena in Vegas that I think Kansas was playing somebody in. And at the time, we were desperate as a league, because I was doing a lot of work with the league back then. We were desperate as a league for a neutral site. And we just couldn't find the right spot. And then Mike sees the Orleans and says, this is it. And it took a little bit of persuasion on the part of the conference staff and other advocates. But I don't think the league has ever looked back on our decision to move the conference tournament to Vegas.
Yeah. No, it's been fantastic. It was, I mean, when I was a student, there was before they moved it, and it was like Zag Nation just took over wherever we were at, you know, granted Santa Clara or San Diego. And I've been fortunate to go to the Vegas tournament as well. So, and now you mentioned you were involved. You had a quite a long stint as the, and I'm going to mess the name up, faculty rep for the athletics folks.
Yeah, I was for many years, I think 14 or so years, the NCAA faculty athletics representative. Every NCAA school has one. It's a position that now at Gonzaga is held very capably by our colleague Peggy Sue LaRoz. And then the way that the league was structured until about 10 or 12 years ago, I was also what was known as the institutional rep to the West Coast Conference, which of all things gave me the vote at the level of the IRs, the ADs, and the senior women's administrators. So for the longest time in the West Coast Conference, the ADs really didn't have a vote. It belonged to the institutional reps. And then, of course, the presidents signed off on everything. But the original vote, for example, to go to the Orleans, if I recall correctly, those votes were cast by the institutional reps and not by the athletic directors. So a little quirk.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Well, very cool. And then at some point, you take on associate dean role here in the School of Business.
Yeah. At some point, I became the associate dean. I don't think there was a whole lot of interest in the job at the time. There were things that, you know, internally needed a little bit of attention. And, you know, Bud was awesome and just kind of let me do my thing. And you know, it was a really, really solid administrative experience, learning about a lot of different things, and hopefully getting a couple things done here or there.
Yeah. When I came through to interview, now that was late 2011. So I guess we're, you know, 12, 13 yeah. years. You were the associate dean, and it was great. It was great. You were made me feel very comfortable, and I mean, the interview process was a positive experience for me. So, but today, sir, you are the longest serving dean across campus. Is that correct? Am I correct when I say that? The most.
You are correct.
Okay. Okay. And now, so we put you. Are you at 10, 11 years? Pretty close to that.
Somewhere between 10 and 11. I never, you know, my tenure as dean was a little bit disjointed. I had a semester early on well, not early, yeah, early on, I guess, when I was acting dean, because towards the end of his deanship, Bud wanted to go to Florence. So I was acting dean while he was in Florence. He came back for a semester, and then I was interim dean for, I think, 2.5 years.
Is it that long? Wow.
It was a while.
Yeah.
It may have been 2 years, but somewhere around 2 years. In the latter part of that 2 year stint, then we had the search for the full-time dean, and I was fortunate enough to get that position. So it's been double digits when you throw everything together.
Yeah, well, fantastic. What's cool about being a dean? What do you enjoy about it? I would ask you what you don't enjoy, but I know it's not pay or dealing with guys like me, so I already know the answer to that. So what's cool about being a dean?
I think the cool thing about it for me personally is the challenge. You know, higher education is changing. It's way different than it was certainly when I was in school. There are a lot of factors that play into that. Some of them we saw coming, some of them we should have seen coming. But I think in 2024, the thing that I find interesting and, dare I say, even exciting is the challenge of continuing our tradition at Gonzaga of absolutely great business education. And at the same time, thinking ahead and trying to figure out, you know, what's next. And the thing about our environment today is we can't deal in 5-year plans. We have to be, you know, thinking a little bit shorter time frame than that. So where are we going to be in 3 years, as opposed to, you know, way, way back in the day, people would have 5-year plans or 10-year plans. That ain't going to work anymore.
And it seems like the role of the dean is evolving. I remember, I want to say your travel schedule has been pretty extensive. You were like in China and had to fly back for the Final Four and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, I think the role of the dean is, and we saw this with Bud, it's external facing, right? I mean, there are things within the building that certainly the dean has a role in, but our culture in the business school, and again, it's a product, you figure, with the exception of a semester while I was doing something else and Molly Pepper was acting dean, we've had two deans since 1979. And that's remarkable in the world of business schools. And so we have a culture that is pretty well established most of the time for better. And that culture is very much bottom up. And so, you know, curriculum change, for example, I don't have my hands all over a curriculum change. That really comes up through the faculty, and that's the way it should be.
Right.
So I'm externally facing, you know, employers, alumni, benefaction, AACSB, other schools like our Jesuit colleagues across the country. You know, that's where I spend a lot of my effort.
Yeah. And I've seen you go on the AACSB, I don't know what you call it, review, site visit. I mean, that's a heavy lift, it seems like.
Yeah, I do quite a bit of work lately for AACSB as part of their continuous improvement review process. I just got done a couple of weeks ago chairing a visit at the University of Pacific in Stockton. and I'm actually going in about, holy cow, 10 days to University of San Diego. I'm chairing their peer review process.
For those who don't know, the AACSB is our business school specific accreditation body, and it is the gold standard. And we've had it, as you said, since you were a grad student or close to soon.
Well, we were working on it then. I think it was originally granted in the late 1980s, but you know, to throw some praise on Rue and all his accounting colleagues, past and present, you know, there are only about 200 schools in the world that are accredited in both business and accounting by AACSB, and we are one of them. And
awesome.
So it's a hallmark of the quality, not just the curriculum and things like that, but also of the people that we have in the business school.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So you mentioned, you know, the changing role and some of the challenges, and some of them are out of our control and we saw them coming, you know, demographic shifts, I guess what we're calling the enrollment cliff, where like by 2029, domestic high school grads that are college bound is supposed to drop somewhere around 15%. And that makes it challenging for institutions like ours, which I think outside of the Ivy League and the Stanfords of the world are similar to us in that you need butts in seats to keep the ship sailing. You know, we don't have massive endowments like the $100 billion in Palo Alto. where do you see things going for us in our unique offering? What do you think the next, I guess I was going to say 5 to 10 years, but sounds like we need to say next 3 years, 2 or 3 years. So
yeah, I think that you know, with everything going on, and the example I use currently is to say, you know, back when I was a student, or even Rue, when you were an undergraduate student, if you wanted to learn about principles of marketing, the easiest way, and in some cases the only way to do that, was either to take a college class in person or to go to the library and get a principal's textbook, right? And that might be a slight exaggeration, but certainly relative to 2024, if you wanted to go learn about principles of marketing right now, you could do it and never leave your couch. You might have to pay for it. It might be free. It might be synchronous. It might be asynchronous. It might be from a Big Ten institution. It might be from some for-profit fly-by-night. But colleges and universities no longer have a monopoly on sharing knowledge. So if an 18-year-old and his or her adults can sit there and say, well, I can get that marketing anywhere, what value are you creating for me? And certainly part of Gonzaga is the community and the culture and the Jesuit philosophy. And I'm not downplaying that part of it at all. But I think we have to find ways as a business school to create value for our students above and beyond what happens in the classroom. And that's where, for example, accounting has been so great for so many years, because what are some other ways you created value? Well, you prepared students really, really well for the CPA exam, and our students got jobs, right? You look at things like internships, you look at things like training programs, and you fast forward to today and you start thinking about competitions, you start thinking about academic conferences, you start thinking about complementary programs or skill sets. Maybe they're not degree based, but they're connected to your business school. You think about programming, you think about things like, you know, our Career and Professional Development Center does such a great job with Trex. Those are the things that help to create great value in 2024 and will serve to differentiate us from other schools in what's a very crowded, too many schools, as you referenced a second ago, too many schools chasing fewer and fewer students.
Yeah.
So we have to be great in the classroom. I mean, that'll never, ever, ever go away, but there's other things we have to bring to the dance now, and we are, in order to do right by our students, which is ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, what we're all about.
Absolutely, absolutely. You referenced the value proposition. It's no secret, you know, tuition increases across the country have outpaced inflation. What's your perception on why that is?
I think for any organization, the cost of running that organization has gone up. You know, you don't think about it with Gonzaga, but I'm positive we cut a check to Avista every month for, you know, heating and electricity and water, right? You know, we put people on airplanes. So you've got the normal costs of doing business, so to speak, that have continued to rise. I think you have an expansion in higher ed of services should be delivered to our students.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think if you look at, you know, what we're doing in student life today at Gonzaga, it probably far exceeds anything they were doing back in the day.
Right.
Some of that is we're wiser. Some of that is we're more practical. Some of it might even be brought on by regulation and law, right? And so I think the cost of doing business everywhere has gone up. Our campus with over 1,000 employees, it's just, you know, I think those are some of the things that explain why our tuition, et cetera, is where it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense. And yeah, we think back when you and I were at school, right? Your dorm room was a bed and pretty much it, a bed and a desk, right? And now there's a little higher expectations. But you're exactly right. When I think of stuff that's happening in Hemingson, you know, for a very good reason, support services that have long been needed, and yeah, that costs money.
Yeah.
Now I have two more questions for you. The first is going to reference the poster behind you, Bruce Springsteen, the boss. How incredible is he live?
He's pretty good live. You know, I've seen him more than a few times. It's always been a great show. I go see him whenever, you know, it's relatively close to be able to do that. And, you know, I don't know how much longer he and the E Street Band will be able to tour. They are getting up there in years. But, you know, here, for example, Sue and I went back and visited our daughter Molly in New York City, and we saw him at Madison Square Garden, and it was a experience as maybe 20 years ago, because he's something that we really enjoy as a family.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Never seen him live. I've been in some good shows, definitely on the bucket list. Well, Kenny, a lot of folks in this building looking up to you, and you shake a lot of hands when they walk across that stage at graduation. What advice would you give to Gonzaga graduates as they embark on the next phase of life and career?
Number one, whatever they do, or however many times they change, because we know today that people are more mobile than they were 30, 40 years ago. Chances are I used to have a career in one of my courses where I talked about, you know, joining the workforce and retiring at 65, and that's 43 years. And, you know, someone who's worked today, or someone who's in their 43rd year today, in 2024, you know, start, you know, back in, and you think about all the things changed in that time period. Being a huge one. Whatever to do, you're going to do it for a long time. You have to embrace the necessity to continually learn and making yourself better. The third thing along the way, the long time, the journey of learning, you know, find to give something back. Will work for you. Because, you know, if you are blessed enough at the stage on Mother's Day, you are true. And there are people away who have helped you and supported you and encouraged you. And you want to find a way to pay that forward. So those three things.
Well said, sir. Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate you.
My pleasure, man.
Thank you for listening to the G Suite Podcast. This episode was produced and hosted by Andrew Brasich and edited by Jack Talbot. To find more G Suite and many other podcasts on the Gonzaga Podcast Network, remember to check out gonzaga.edu/podcasts. Thanks again.